We're in the middle of a series right now. We're at the end of a series, actually. This is the part three. We usually just pick a topic and talk about it for a few weeks. The great news about today is if you like today, I'm not the normal preacher. Normally, Andy Stanley speaks, and he's incredible, and you're going to love him. If you don't like today, come back next week because he's preaching next week. So that's the way that works out. We're starting a brand new series, as I said, next week called Love Dates and Heartbreaks. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. But this series, Fight For It, is really all about resilience. It's all about building resilience in us. It's such an important trait, such an important value. And resilience is like a muscle. It's a muscle that you work on. And the more you work on it, the bigger it actually gets. It's not a fixed state. And so today I want to talk about one aspect of resilience, maybe the primary reason why we have to fight for resilience. In fact, fighting for resilience is such a better option than just hoping for it or waiting for it or wishing for it. It's something we can actually fight for in the middle of challenges. But to get us started, I want to show you just a couple of places that talk about the life of Jesus, because the life of Jesus mentions on the way into Jesus's life this particular word. Jesus himself talked about it. And then when people wrote about Jesus, they also mentioned this word. And I'm just going to use these three different places to help set up why this is so important for us. I think it will be something you will relate to. This is in Isaiah 53. Isaiah was a prophet. He lived way before Jesus actually walked the earth. And he wrote this, speaking prophetically about Jesus. He says, "He, being Jesus, was or will be despised and rejected by mankind." That Jesus was going to be rejected by mankind, that he was a man of suffering and familiar with pain. And so he tells us, hey, here's one thing you got to know about what Jesus is going to be like when he comes. It might be confusing because you're going to think, oh, this king is coming and everyone's going to accept him. Nope. There's going to be plenty of people who will reject him. And then Jesus himself, he said something similar. And speaking to his closest followers, Mark actually gives us this account of what Jesus said. This is found in Mark 8. "He," being Jesus, "then began to teach them," his closest followers sitting around a fire or walking down the road, "that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be," there's our word again, "that he would be rejected," that he would not just be rejected by mankind, he's more specific, "by elders, chief priests, and the teachers of the law." These are actually the religious leaders. These are the people that you would have thought would have accepted Jesus. He had this amazing agenda of helping people, of accepting people, of healing people. But he was rejected by the religious leaders of the day. And then a guy named Peter, who is probably one of the most dynamic figures in all of the first century church. Peter was bold and brash. He lived wide open kind of life. And Peter wrote this letter, wrote a few letters actually, but one of the letters that Peter wrote, he wrote about Jesus. And here's something he said about Jesus. This is in 1 Peter 2, verse 4. He said, "He," being Jesus, "is the living stone, and he's rejected." He was rejected by humans. Why this word? Why such specificity around this word? Why did the prophet speaking about Jesus mention this? Why did Jesus himself mention this? Why did Peter, closest follower of Jesus on the back end, why did he also mention this? Maybe because there's something for you and I to learn about rejection. In fact, that's what I want to talk about today, is I want to talk about this word, the word rejection. Because resilience matters because rejection happens, right? It's because we experience this similar kind of rejection that Jesus seemed to experience. That's the whole reason why we have to build resilience. We gave this definition in the series of resilience, that resilience is bouncing back from disruption. It's the speed and the strength at which you bounce back from disruption. And disruption could be anything. You know, the traffic you experience on the way to work, on the way home, or maybe it's your car breaking down, or maybe it's some kind of financial problem that you have. Whatever that disruption is, our ability to bounce back from that is really dependent upon how much resilience we have. But today specifically, I want to talk about bouncing back from rejection, bouncing back from the rejection of other people. All of us have experienced rejection in our past. We all have stories of rejection. Maybe you're in the middle of a season right now where you're experiencing some kind of rejection, but we're all going to experience it in the future as well. And so how do we build resilience through it? How can we handle criticism without being crushed by it? How can we not just have resilience in the middle of rejection? How can we actually use the rejection to help us build resilience? That's the intention that God has for every one of us, that we would be able to not just survive the rejection, but we would be able to thrive through it and grow because of it. In fact, without resilience, if we didn't have resilience, rejection, it will wreck us. Rejection will wreck us. How do I know that? Well, because it's my own story, because I've heard your story. It's all of us have stories of rejection attaching itself to us and messing us up. And it comes in so many different forms, right? Some of you have lost a job. And yeah, maybe the company said, oh, well, we're just downsizing. Well, it didn't make it any easier. Maybe they said, oh, we're just closing that one department. It didn't make it any easier because you probably thought, like all of us would think, well, yeah, but if you would have really wanted me, you would have kept me around, and you didn't, so I feel rejected. Or maybe you made some kind of proposal. You know, you spent a lot of time working on it, taking it to the boss, taking it to the board, and put it right there in front of them, and they said, eh, no thanks. And it left a stain maybe, or it left hurt, or it left heartbreak. Maybe you weren't invited to the party. Some neighbors got together last weekend, and they didn't invite you. And then worse, you open up Instagram the next day and you see all about their party. Which, by the way, those of you who lived in the day and age when we didn't have Instagram, what did you do when your self-esteem got too much? I mean, how did you like knock it down a couple notches without the use of Instagram, right? It keeps us so humble. I guess back in the day when you didn't get invited to the party, you just, I don't know, you just didn't know about it. I don't know. You kind of heard about it through the grapevine. You know, now it's just so apparent. It's so in our face. Because you see all the pictures of the dinner you didn't get invited to. Oh, I thought we were friends. I guess not, right? Maybe some of you have experienced a breakup recently. Maybe you've been through a divorce recently. And as painful as it was, if you were to get underneath the pain, maybe one of the things you're feeling is, you know, it just feels like that it was about me. Feels like that he or she just rejected me. Maybe that's how you feel. And as much as they said in the breakup, no, it's me, it's not you. You're like, eh, kind of feels like me, you know? As much as you're trying to say, oh, it's all about you and you just got some other things going on. You just want to date Jesus right now. Got it, you know? It still kind of feels like me. Maybe you got something from your past where you didn't make the team or you didn't get the part or you didn't get the job. I don't know what it is, but we all have different stories and rejection shows up in different forms. And it's amazing how rejection is more than just an emotional experience. No, but actually it keeps us from things. Rejection will paralyze us from moving forward, and it will convince us that we're now damaged goods, that we're too broken to be used again. When I was, I actually was talking to my wife about it this weekend because we were on in the car driving somewhere, and she said, hey, so what are you preaching about on Sunday? She was trying to determine whether or not she was going to come. I mean, very common. Who can blame her? You know, that's what you would all do. Same thing. I'm just kind of just partly kidding, right? Anyway, so I said, oh, I'm talking about rejection. And she was like, oh, well, that's going to be heavy. That's certainly helpful. Everybody has experienced that. I'm like, yeah, for sure. I said, what about you? Can you remember anything from your past where you experienced rejection? And the story that she shared with me, I remember it happening. We had just gotten married. I remember the situation, but I didn't know that now, you know, over a decade later, that she was still hanging on to, that it was still part of her story. I just, that surprised me. But it shouldn't, because that's the way rejection works. Rejection attaches itself to us. She just told me this simple little story about this job that she interviewed for right when she graduated from college. And she had this interview with this particular person that was just very intimidating. And she just sat in that interview and she just felt exposed. She felt like this person asked her questions that she wasn't ready for. She didn't feel prepared for it. She didn't have answers for this person's questions. And she just said she felt the whole time like this person was just judging her and was just saying, oh, clearly you don't have what it takes. And then she didn't get a call back afterwards. And it just really messed with her confidence. It messed with her self-esteem. And here she was now over a decade later telling me this story. And we shouldn't be surprised by that, because rejection, it attaches itself to who we are. It sends us, listen to this. This is what rejection does. It actually sends ourselves on a mission to go destroy our self-esteem and our self-worth. It sends us this message going, hey, go find the self-esteem, go find the self-worth, and let's go destroy it. That's what rejection does. It disturbs us at such a deep level, because all of us have this thing in us that needs to belong. And whenever we experience rejection, it's destabilizing. It knocks us out of balance, because it makes us feel like, oh no, maybe I don't belong. Maybe this is deeper than I could have thought it was going to be. Researchers have actually told us that rejection affects us physically. That when we experience any kind of negative social feedback, or you know, the sense that your reputation has been diminished, or that you are excluded, or that you're poorly thought of, that it actually influences our nervous system. So it's why sometimes you feel like, I can't catch my breath. I can't even breathe. You feel yourself gasping for air more than you ever would have before. And in some cases, people have actually said that they feel like a victim of an attack, that they can actually remember the emotional pain of rejection more than they can remember physical pain of things that they've been through. But it certainly keeps us from being successful moving forward, because it paralyzes us, makes us think like, oh, I can't risk myself. I can't put myself out there. What it does is it bakes into us. It plasters itself to the walls of our heart. It gets on the forefront of our consciousness, to where we're always just kind of subtly thinking about it. And then it gets all over the rough sketches of our dreams. The future we see for ourselves, the hopes that we have for ourselves, it mixes itself into all of that. So what do we do about that? What do we do about this rejection that wants to wreck us? Well, fortunately, I think there is something we can do. I've been learning about this word over the last year that has been super helpful for me. The word is differentiation. Differentiation is it's a term that counselors or psychologists use to try to help us establish our own sense of identity. Usually when they're talking about differentiation, they talk about differentiating yourself from your family of origin. You know, having to make decisions for yourself, decisions that even might not please your parents, or might, if you're chasing after your dad's, I'm proud of you. Like you feel like, you know what, that might not get that, but I've got to differentiate and I've got to be myself. It's an incredibly powerful process that every one of us are in the middle of, that we're all on a journey to differentiate ourselves and figure out, okay, well, who am I? Differentiation, a real simple definition is this. Differentiation says, I can be connected to you, so I'm not gonna be callous and act like I don't care. I can have a relationship with you. I can be connected to you, but how you feel and how you think and what you think of me does not determine how I feel, how I think, and how I act. That I can let you, if you're frustrated, I can let you be frustrated without taking the bait of your negative emotion. I can let you feel how you feel about life, but I don't have to get all wrapped up in how you feel. I can differentiate myself and I can be me apart from you. Differentiation defines like, this is me and this is you. I gotta be responsible for my own actions and feelings and thoughts and behaviors, and so do you. And I can be connected to you, we can be in a relationship, but I don't have to let that affect me at such a deep level. And as we think about the life of Jesus, as we think about who Jesus was, Jesus, he sets a model for us of what it looks like to be an incredibly differentiated person. It's so tricky when you're thinking about Jesus, talking about Jesus, trying to learn about our lives from the life of Jesus, because Jesus himself, he claimed to be from God, but then he also claimed to be God. And theologians, to understand Jesus correctly, they gave us this term that Jesus was fully God, but yet he was fully man. So we have the divinity of God stuffed into a body. He's the image of the invisible God. But then at the same time, we've got the humanity of God, that God is incarnate, he's in flesh on earth. And to understand Jesus, probably you have to understand both of those sides, but the humanity of Jesus shows us that he went through a lot of the same stuff we go through. Betrayal, loneliness, Feelings of inadequacy. Do I measure up? Do I have what it takes? He had to have wrestled with all of that, but there was a way that he seemed to differentiate himself from all of that stuff, from all of those thoughts and feelings of other people. Jesus, if you know a little bit about his biography, his background, Jesus was born to Virgin Mary. His father, though, on earth, his earthly father was Joseph. Joseph was a carpenter, and so Jesus just went along, it seems, with the family business. And the first 30 years of Jesus' life, we don't really even know much about Jesus. We just know, well, he seemed to have an industry, a profession. He was a carpenter, which was so helpful when I learned that, because this buddy of mine that used to give me a ride to school, he drove this like cherry red Blazer. Such a great ride when you're in high school. And he had a bumper sticker on the back that said, "My boss is a Jewish carpenter." And I used to see that bumper sticker and I'd be like, "Man, what does that even mean? Like, you got like a side job? Like, what are you doing in the afternoon? What, you know, and why do you need to tell people that you have a boss that's a Jewish carpenter?" And then I finally realized, I'm like, oh, it's talking about Jesus, you know? Okay, got it. So I'm just, if you see that, I'm just saving you the mental energy that it took me. You're probably a little quicker on the uptick than I was, but it took me a while to figure that out. But Jesus was in carpentry. And then he has this moment where he, in a sense, begins doing these miracles that instituted or initiated his ministry on earth, the last 3 years of his life. And we don't know much about the first 30, but we know a lot about the last three. But before he did any of that, there was this moment that happened that I wanna take us into that moment. Because what we learn about Jesus understanding his own identity, about Jesus establishing his own identity apart from his family of origin, apart from other people's feelings and thoughts about him, seemed to help him prepare him to face the rejection that was going to be coming his way. And what I hope to do is I hope we can get into this moment and learn from it so that we might also be able to find the resilience we need to get through the rejection that we also face. This is the moment in time. It was down by the river. There was a man named John. Everybody knows him as John the Baptist. He was baptizing people at the river. People would go from the town. They would all go watch this. And baptism was this symbol of I'm washing off the old and I'm coming up new. And Jesus encouraged people to be baptized. But there was one particular day, Matthew, one of Jesus' followers, he tells us that Jesus himself went to go get baptized. And we're not going to look at some of the conversation that Jesus had with John the Baptist, but initially John the Baptist was like, "Hey, I'm unfit to baptize you. I can't baptize you." He said, "I'm not even fit to tie the laces of your sandals." But Jesus says, "No, no, no, I need you to do this. I want to show people, I want to give people a model. I want to set an example for people of what I want them to do." But it's not the baptism itself. It's what happened right after it. Here's what Matthew said. Matthew chapter 3, verse 16. He said, "As soon as Jesus was baptized, he went up out of the water. And at that moment, heaven was opened and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him." Now, you know, when I read this, I thought, gosh, this is gonna be so confusing to people. I mean, it's confusing to me. I'm sorry, what happened? The heavens opened up? Like, what does that mean? Like there was a bad storm? What happened? We don't know. All we know is Matthew's just a guy. He was a tax collector. He didn't go to journalism school. He's just writing down. He's just making an account of what he remembered about this day. And he says, "Oh, it was this dramatic experience. Jesus came up out of the water. It was like the heavens opened up. The scene changed. Something spectacular happened. And you could feel the Spirit of God." The Spirit of God was like a dove and it was alighting Jesus. And then there was this voice. And I want you to look at what the voice said, because it's so profound and it has such deep implications for you and for me as well. Matthew 3, verse 17 says this, "A voice from heaven said, 'This is my son whom I love. With him, I am well pleased.'" You can just imagine the scene. The heavens open, scene kind of changes, the mood changes. And then there was this booming voice. I'm sure it sounded like Morgan Freeman's voice, right? Said, "This is my son whom I love." And with him, I'm well pleased. Why was this so important? Because God was establishing Jesus' identity. He was ascribing to Jesus his identity. And identity is best when it's ascribed to you. Identity is a tricky thing for us to work out because identity has so many parts to it. There's the family that you grew up in, where you came from, the way you got into this world, the way you made it through this world. There's the way you think about yourself. There's also the way other people know you to be. But the best kind of identity is not the kind of identity that we find when we look within or that we find when we look to other people for, but it's the one that we find when we look up, when we let our Creator identify us and say, this is who you are. And this is what God was doing to Jesus. And it was before he had done any of his miracles. He hadn't walked on water. He hadn't fed the 5,000. He hadn't calmed the storm. He had not healed anyone yet. He had not healed the man that was born blind. He hadn't healed the leper. He hadn't healed the one who couldn't walk. He hadn't healed the bleeding woman. He hadn't done any of that yet. And before he did anything, before he preached any of his sermons, seems like God is going, hey, no matter what happens, no matter what's to come, I just want to let you know that you are my son. And I love you. And I am well pleased with you. There's rejection that's coming, and you're going to need to know this to be able to make it through the rejection. John, that wrote about Jesus' life, he tells us that God does the same thing for us. He says in his first chapter of John, John 1, verse 12, he says that to all of us, to all of those, to all of you who believe in him, he gave you the right to become a child of God. He gave you the right to call yourself, to think of yourself as a son, as a daughter of God. And Jesus went to the cross, motivated by love. He was resurrected from the dead to show off his divinity, that he was who he said he was. And he did it driven by love, motivated by love. Maybe he would say the same thing to you, the same thing to me, that this is my son whom I love and am well pleased. This is my daughter whom I love and am well pleased. Yeah, but you don't know what happened last weekend. We're not talking about last weekend. I'm talking about who you are. That's what you did. Yeah, but what about the rejection that happened in that relationship or at work? Okay, we can talk about that later, but I need to establish who you are before any of that even happens, that you are my child. I love you, and I'm well pleased with you. And ultimately, when Jesus was crucified, it was this ultimate rejection, but it established for us a resurrection from the rejection that we would face. There's something profound about him experiencing rejection and buying for us, winning for us the ability to bounce back, to bounce forward from the rejection that we're going to face. This is real life to me. This is not just preacher talk, but I've got a job. I mean, I work here. That's what I do. And I live a life. I mean, I think, you know, I'll bump into people in the grocery store and they're like, whoa, you grocery shop? You know, it's like seeing your teacher outside of the classroom or something, you know, when you're a kid and you're like, oh my goodness, I thought you just lived in the school and you're just like locked up in there, but they let you out, you know? But I've got a life. I mean, it's not like a great life. I mean, I think it's great, but I'm not like bawling, all right? I'm just saying I've got this life outside of this thing, all right? But I tell you that because I had this situation that happened about a year ago where I experienced the power of this statement. We've had some things, there were some things that were happening in my job that were making me feel like I wasn't doing a good job, making me feel like I was a failure or feel like I wasn't measuring up. And I was in the middle of all these debates with people about, you know, my bosses, about what should this mean? What are these numbers and these measurables? And how should I look at myself? And what's my role to play? And what's just the changing landscape of the world, all this stuff. I wouldn't bore you with all that, but there was this situation where we had this one particular meeting on a Tuesday, and it felt like it had reached a height to where I felt like I need to go have a conversation with my boss about this. My boss's name is Lane, and he's a fantastic boss. And so I couldn't shake the feeling on Tuesday, I couldn't shake it on Wednesday, and I couldn't shake it on Thursday. And so at the end of the day on Thursday, I sent him a message. I said, hey, could we get together before the weekend? Because I don't want to take this into the weekend. I feel like I just need to get this. I need to have a conversation with you about this. I need to get your feedback. I need to talk to you about this. And so we're sitting there in my office talking about it. And it turned into a robust discussion. I mean, we were arguing a bit, you know, what does this number mean? What does that number mean? What's the consequence of that? And does that need to change? I mean, just stuff that you've had conversations like that with your boss as well. And I felt something inside of me. I started feeling emotion rise up. Have you ever felt that? And I did what you have done. I was like, no, now's not the time. Like, go back down there, you know? But the emotion was like, oh no, we're coming out. Like, this is our time, you know? And I was like, no one invited you out. It's like, it doesn't matter. Like, we're coming out. And so I started crying. And I've never cried in a meeting. I'm not like opposed to it. I'm not judging you if you have, all right? But I mean, things have gone well. And I've been like, wow, that's amazing. Or, you know, something sad that's happened by the nature of our work. But I've never just cried over a spreadsheet, you know? And so I was like, what is wrong with me? Like, what's going on? And then it got to the point where I couldn't form a full sentence. You know, one of those moments where you're like, I got to pull it together, but I couldn't. There was more and more coming out. And he did what all of you have had to do before. You know that awkward feeling where you're like, do I sit here and just let them wait it out, you know? Do I try to like make a joke, you know, to lighten the mood? Do I get up and give him a hug, you know, which that would have been odd. And so he tried all that. I could feel it. You know, and he finally out, he's like, is everything okay? You know, and I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. You know, I'm like, no, I mean, I'm not fine. Like, clearly, I'm not fine, all right? This is not normal behavior. This is really odd. I don't even know what's going on. And then I did what is probably one of the more hilariously embarrassing moments of my career. My boss, who is a pastor, asked me, who is a pastor, he said, can I pray for you? And I said, no. That was rock bottom for me. So I said, I got to get up and go. I got to go. I just got to go. And so I just left and I went out of my car and I had like a 30 minute drive home. And so I'm just driving home and it was just more, you know, just like tears and sobbing. And I'm like, what is going on? This is weird. Is this like a midlife crisis? What's going on? And so I started having a conversation with God. I mean, this is the beauty of having a relationship with God, is that you can talk to him whenever. And so I started telling him things and I started trying to listen and go, what do you think about this? And I was really trying to like explore. I was trying to get in and be like, what is going on? And so I started identifying, you know what? I feel like a failure. I feel like there's this perception of me at work that makes me seem like I'm a failure. I was just experiencing all of these negative emotions that I'm a super positive person that can reframe things pretty easily. And I wasn't able to do it. And so then I started asking the question, well, God, what do you think about all this? And what I didn't hear was, I think, you know, you're not a failure, because the truth might be, maybe I am going to fail at things. Maybe you are going to fail at things. The answer is not, you're never a failure. That would be silly. That would be dumb. That'd be denying reality. I mean, I didn't need like the Babe Ruth, like, oh, he struck out a couple thousand times and hit a bunch of home runs, or the Michael Jordan, like, look at all the shots he missed. No, I mean, I get it. Like, you got to put yourself out there. But I also didn't feel like I heard him say, okay, well, just don't ever risk again. Just like get in your little cocoon and don't ever put yourself out there again and just play it safe the rest of your life. No, that's not good either. And I've never heard an audible voice of God. And so this was not some audible, this was not like the clouds parted and the doves descended, you know, and Morgan Freeman said, this is my son. No, it wasn't like that. But what I experienced was the power of this statement. What do I think about this? I mean, I think, okay, well, put all that aside. I mean, what do I think about you? You're my son, and I love you, and I'm pleased in you. I'm pleased with you. And of course, that made me like even more emotional, because I'm like, yeah, that is what God would say. That is what he would say. That's what he thinks about me. The rejection aside, because failure and rejection run on parallel tracks. And so anytime you experience failure, it will oftentimes feel like rejection. But his answer to us in that moment is not, oh, you're succeeding. And it's also not, hey, don't try again. His answer is, you're my son. You're my daughter. I love you. I am pleased with you. Now, we can work through the rejection, and we should, but I need you to know this is who you are. And let's make sure to differentiate who you are from what you did or from what you're doing, because those want to get entangled, and that's really dangerous. When you start mistaking what I'm doing or what I've done with who I am, he says, this is who you are. And so if you would allow me to, what I would love to do, I would love to just give you, here's a couple of practical things that I think I've got to do, practical things that I think you ought to do when you're in the middle of dealing with that kind of rejection to be able to build resilience. Here's the first one. The first one is this. You got to be honest about how the rejection feels. You can't deny the reality of it. You can't act like, oh, don't let it hurt. Don't be sad about it. No, be honest about it. This is why going to see a professional is so helpful, because they help you wade through those emotions. So important to do that. Secondly, would you consider offering yourself some kindness? I mean, if someone came to you and told you your story, you would go, man, how can I encourage you? How can I care for you? And it's amazing how quick we are to do that with other people and how slow we are to do that with ourselves. But what if you treated yourself as someone that you're responsible to help? So show yourself some compassion, some kindness. And then thirdly, would you consider learning from the rejection? There's something to learn from it. Maybe the relationship didn't work. It's worth looking in the mirror and going, okay, what part do I have in this? What can I learn? You lost the job. It's worth going, okay, let me figure it out. Is there anything I can own? Is there anything I can grow from? Don't grow numb to it. Don't completely disregard it. Because rejection will do one of two things. Depending on how you respond to it, rejection will either turn into a regret, it will lead to more regret, or it will turn into wisdom. And you get to decide. See, too often we see life as this pass-fail thing. You know, oh, the situation happened, I feel rejected, I failed. No, life is better when we see it as a laboratory. What do I have to learn? How can I grow from this? How can I take something from this? Would you consider learning from the rejection? And then last, would you refuse to let the rejection define you? Would you make a conscious decision? I am going to refuse to let this rejection define me. Yeah, that's what happened, but this is who I am. And those are two different things. So what does he say about who I am? Well, he says that you're my son, you're my daughter. I love you. I'm pleased with you. See, the only way we can do that is by building resilience. Resilience is the ability to redirect your response to rejection. Rejection wants to wreck you, but resilience is what you and I can find. It's what we can grow. It's what we can build so that we can redirect our rejection to something we can grow from. But you only do that by listening to his voice, by letting him be the one to declare who you are. I love this little verse in 1 Peter. I read the first part of it, but I intentionally didn't get to the second part because I wanted to come back to it at the end. But 1 Peter 2, verse 4 says, as you come to him, the living stone who was rejected by humans, remember that he was chosen by God and he was precious to him. And so are you. That as you come to him, remember that, yeah, you might be rejected by humans, but you are chosen by him and you're precious to him. That is who you are. You have the acceptance of God. And so don't let the rejection of others become bigger than what God has already given you. I've asked the band if they would come and play this song at the end, because the song essentially just says that. It says, hey, would you choose to believe who he says you are? Would you remind yourself, and would you choose to believe that you have been accepted by him? In fact, would you refuse to to let others' rejection of you eclipse what God's acceptance says about you. His acceptance says that you are his, that he's yours, that you're his child. And down the road, there's a vision for your life that he has. He sees a more resilient version of you, one that is able to handle rejection from others. Imagine if you really allowed yourself to be loved like he wants to love you, whose rejection could you not face? I might be rejected by humans, but I'm accepted by God. And we live in a culture, we live in a world that wants to tie us up into knots, that wants to let the rejection tie us up into who we're not and what we're not. But our Father in heaven says, no, I'm here to untie those knots. I'm here to break those knots. I'm here to tell you who you are. I'm here to invite you into believing what I say about you and letting my voice be louder than all the others. So would you consider elevating his voice, turning up the volume of his voice, letting yourself believe what he says about you as what's most important about you? I believe when we get there, as we grow toward that kind of identity, that's when we become people that are able to handle rejection. You don't have to worry about it wrecking you. No, you can grow from it. You can be better you can be better because of it. But it begins with accepting what he says about you.